Blog Talk Radio.
On a bus, in a dream, I saw you. You were a beautiful girl in a dress I could see through. And the colors that surround you, like neon on the avenue. The people all around you were dust in my eyes. And I wanted to believe you, the lies that I could see through. But I never got between you, the ghost in your mind. Yeah, the ghost in your mind. Is there in your eyes?
Hello and welcome to Down of Two, Really Random Stuff with Guy Darkholme on a Team of Voices. Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com. And we always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for running the site, letting us share our poetry and our thoughts. Also a special thanks to Deborah Lee for running the group. Another special thanks to the A.C. Taylor Foundation to help support the group. And I'm your host, Kay. I think that is about it. Tonight we have I don't have three prompts tonight. This is my second show back, and I'm back to making people do homework. And it's just where words derive from specifically. So it'll be fun. They could write the actual technicality of it, or they could have picked a god or brought something mildly on topic. We opened with Black Lab, a group that I absolutely love. They don't have much notoriety, I don't think, on the radio or enough, I would say. It's an alternative rock band founded by Paul Durham and in Berkeley, California, and currently based in Los Angeles and Montana. They released their debut album on Geffen Records entitled Your Body Above Mine and scored two rock radio hits in the U.S., Wash It Away and Time Ago, after leaving Geffen in 1999. The band signed to Epic Records, contributing a track to Sony's Spider-Man before leaving the label. Since 2003, the band has independently released 9 full-length items, an EP, and a live concert DVD CD set, Passion Nothing on Mine Again, and gain significant exposure through internet media outlets and the film trailer. The Night was used as a theme song for season 6 trailer FX's The Shield, and was featured in House and the band chief Paul Durham, Andy Ellis are currently the core members. The band works with the Secret Road Music Services to make the band's music available for licensing. And that song was called Ghost in Your Mind. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you look them up, because they're definitely a great band if you don't know them. If you do, you're welcome. And we have a few people on the line that I'd like to say hello to. Hello, Sweden.
Hello.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm tired. I just finished pedaling at the Y.
You just finished what?
Pedaling, or I guess they call it spinning now, but, you know, stationary bike.
Oh, okay. At the Y? That's exciting.
Yeah, I suppose. I was reading The Stand while I was pedaling.
While you were pedaling? Oh, how's that?
Oh, cool. The Stand.
I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could read and do anything like walking at the same time. Even if I was stationed, I don't know if I could. I don't know if my brain can do that. I don't know. Like an audio book, I definitely. But as for like a physical book, while moving, I feel like I would get a little lost. So kudos to you to be able to handle that kind of multitasking. I know a lot of people that do. A lot of people say they love it, and I just look at them every time, and I'm like, I would unconsciously start slowing down, and then I would just be reading, not doing anything. When we went kayaking last year, I only went with him a couple times. It wasn't my like kayaking buddy, but we went out and he brought a blanket and a book, and we pedaled out to the middle of the lake, and then he just laid down in his blanket and got out his book. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, are we gonna go kayak? He's like, yeah, we are right now. We're gonna sit out here and we're gonna read. And I'm like, well, I'm gonna go kayak around because I didn't bring a book or a blanket. I would have liked to see him kayak while reading. That would have been interesting. One, I don't even know. We just have to get a stand, I guess. Anyway. Well, we have some. Glad you're here, Stephen. And we have one more person in the studio. Hello, Rack and Tor.
Hello.
Were you on the treadmill or the cycle too?
No.
Or?
My idea of peddling is selling shit. So yeah, I'm a little different.
There you go. Everyone to their own.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you guys are doing well. I am not gonna lie. I am a little tired. I was dozing while trying to I was actually reading, but I was laying down when I was reading, and I was dozing while I was doing it. So I all right, we have to get up.
and do something else besides this. But I hope you liked the topic, and I am going to open the floor to Stephen.
I'm actually afraid of calendars.
You're afraid of calendars?
Yeah, they remind me that my days are numbered.
Yeah, Alan Parsons.
You what?
Well, Alan Parsons Project had a song about days being numbered.
All right. I have your. I don't know how long you have, Stephen. So I'm going to put you on the board first, and I would like you, if you would, you don't have to, I can, but if you want to explain, if you want to add anything that you had learned or anything like that about days of the week, you may. If not, I'll step in real quick before your poem.
Yeah, go ahead, step in, because I'll have to be honest with this guy. I didn't do any homework at all. I just knew I had this poem.
Okay.
All right.
You know what? You showed up, and that's what matters. Because you know what? You're going to be like the kid in class who learns in class. So it's fine, because you're going to walk away tonight, and you're going to know the topic, and you're going to have brought me a poem, and that's ultimately what matters. So the topic was days of the week, where they come from. And when you speak of, okay, how old the language is, and when you think about how language had shaped us and like where it came from, it's pretty interesting to note that the days of the week are originally passed down, and they can be different in different cultures, but ultimately they're passed down even before Greek mythology to Norse mythology and named after pagan gods, really. So when you think about how old this language is, Sunday being Dies Solis. In the French, in every language, it's altered from that. So you have an idea. So Sol, the sun god, he was also a Roman ancient sun god. There's so many. Monday, Lune or Lunas. In Rome, ancient Rome was the moon goddess, but it's derivatives from Greek mythology as well and Norse mythology. Tuesday, Dies Martis, or Mars Day, and by the way, also based on what? The Mars, the planet. And that's why, like, if you think about in Spanish translation, Miércoles, you know, they're all translated from, that's Wednesday, I'm sorry, Miércoles is Wednesday. And then Wednesday, Mercury, and that's based on Norse mythology, Woden, which would be Odin's day. So I'm sure you've heard of Odin. So there we go. Yeah. And then Thursday, of course, Jupiter. And that would be Thor's day, Thor. And I'm not going to explain who Thor is, because I think everybody knows who Thor is because of the movies that are coming out. And then, of course, Friday. And there's a good few ways to say this. You can say Freya, Freyk, or Freyga. There's, like, lots of different ways. And then, of course, she's a goddess. She's Odin's wife. And there's some significance there. And then Saturday, Saturn's Day, or Seder, and that one's a little darker, but it later got taken over by Christianity on the Sabbath day, so that one kind of got taken over. It was a little too dark for some people, and they kind of changed it around. And I'm not going to go into deeper stuff than that right now. I would like Stephen to be able to read his poem, but it's cool to see where you are. So next time, it's Thursday, so what's today, Tuesday, or tomorrow, you can say, hey, it's Odin's day, and people have no idea what you're saying. You'd be like, well, you know what, these words came from, and here it is, and you could just go there, and random bits of information, which I always like. But, Stephen, you brought me a poem about a god.
I did.
Which was the homework.
And
so you did do some of the homework.
No, he copied off a case paper. He didn't do it himself.
Oh, my gosh, that K.
This isn't any of the gods that you had mentioned, but it does mention soul in the poem, so I thought it would fit kind of loosely. We're Picture Prop Monte, way back in 2020, all those years ago, and this is called Neptune Sovereignty of Chromaticity. Ugh. Emerald and gold shimmer through the crusted formations of crimson, indigo, and cobalt. Chartreuse hula dancers reach for the shimmering surface. Glimmering platinum beams from Sol reach down to greet them. Silver and pearl grins as it darts speedily through, precipitating tiny apricot and ivory to its sconce. Dark obsidian shadow engulfs all as spectacular cerulean cetacean flies gently overhead. This is my aqueous kingdom. Leave Amphrite, myself, and all the children in armistice. End point.
I love this. So I would say this is very much on topic, and I think you're right. So I would never worry about that because it does mention a god, and that the gods were the props. So, and also, by the way, this would be, so in Roman mythology, you have Neptune, and then in Greek mythology, his parallel will be Poseidon, obviously, and Poseidon / Neptune are my favorite gods because I really love the sea. And one of my favorite things, I've read the Lightning Thief series by Rick Riordan because my nephew was reading them, and I wanted to be able to have, I wanted him to have someone to talk to about it. And so when he started reading them, I tried to stay one book ahead throughout his reading so that he can kind of say, oh, hey, Auntie, this happened. I'm like, oh, yeah, wasn't it cool how this happened? And I found myself, even though it was a young reader's book and I was reading it for him, I found myself very interested in the storyline. I mean, it was very clearly for young readers, but and I do read a lot of young readers and children's books. This one I don't know if I would have read without the coach, but I'm glad I did. And one of the cool things that they do, they talk about all Greek mythology, and then they make the switch in the second set of five, and then they go to the Roman mythology where they use Neptune. So it's cool how they take literature like that and they make it accessible and manageable for children and reinvent it. And your poem is yet another way to reinvent information and characterization of these Roman gods through poetry. So Emerald God of Shimmer Through, I could tell right away by the title that you picked Neptune. So I knew we were going to go on the sea. I think that your depiction of the picture and how you went this way was brilliant, because I looked at that one picture, and what do you see? I liked how you went with Neptune and not Poseidon, because, I mean, I do love Poseidon too, but I think Poseidon gets more of the fame, in my opinion. You ever say the god of the sea, you're going to say Poseidon. So I kind of like that you went with Neptune. I love the descriptions with the silver and pearl grins as it darts speedily through. I love that part. And then, of course, the dark obsidian shadows engulf. Because the thing about the ocean is that you can look at it, or any body of water, sea, ocean, you can look at any body of water, and then depending on the light, the reflections, the depth, the waves, it couldn't be glittering as the sun or dark as the deepest caverns. And I think it's moody. And I think, as a Pisces, I definitely can relate to that and relate to those how water can move and change and kind of cultivate its surroundings. And I liked how you brought that together to the poem. So this is really cool. I love it. Oh, and the hula dancers. I thought... reaching for the shimmering surface. I thought that was, sorry, Rack, if that was a line you were going to take, but I thought that was really creative. I really did. I thought that that was a great visual, and I liked how you put the beams of Saul in here, because, you know, that was in the prop. So really well done, and you already had it. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
And Rack, now that you have time to talk, because I was talking for like 20 minutes now, you can make a comment.
That's no problem. I get to drop my corny puns, you know, you really sunk your teeth into this and dove deep. I thought you did an amazing job, though, highlighting how when you look at a body of water, you can't really tell what lies below the surface or how deep it really is. You know, that idea, when you're using that as a descriptor, I think is brilliant, and I love that. The whole Neptune as being, you know, one of the gods and you know, in charge of the sea. You know, I'm Neptune over Poseidon. I don't know why, but I just think his name is cooler, or, you know, I think he's more known for the trident than Poseidon. I don't know. Neptune's trident, not Poseidon's trident. But anyway, you didn't even mention the trident, actually. But I just thought it was a great piece. You know, very descriptive, colorful, and you weren't shellfish with the details.
I also didn't mention his kiss either.
Ah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
I didn't
know if Stephen was going to elaborate on that. So I was
waiting. Well, I was waiting for you to ask me to, because I wasn't sure if you wanted me to.
Oh, no. Talk away. I don't. Yeah.
Well, that's when you're using the restroom and the splash, you know, hits you on the bottom.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what that was, so I was just like, I don't know what that is. So, that's funny. I like that. I like that description. All right. Well, since you went into, I will say, Sol is the personification of the sun. And it's from Roman mythology, obviously. And they had, that's it. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't know how long you have, Stephen. But I do want you to say thank you, first of all, for coming and for hanging out. And you can stay as long as you want, and I can hang you out. But I want you to plug your shows before you go. In any case, so let's do that now.
Okay, well, the show we've got going this week, Wednesday, tomorrow, is that tomorrow? Yes, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. It's the show that's been canceled and rescheduled a couple of times, and we're going to try to do it this time. I think we're going to make it. We're going to do George and Tammy, George Jones and Tammy Wynette. We're going to listen to songs from them. We're going to learn about those songs and read some poems inspired by those songs, or we're going to read some poems that are inspired by quotes from the miniseries that Showtime did about them called George and Tammy, as we have quotes from that to write to as well. And that's 7:30 p.m. tomorrow evening. And that would lead us over to you, Sky. I don't know if you want to plug yours now or not.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you for the instruction. Thank you. And Thursday night on my new time at 8 p.m. over at Poetic Slice of Life. You're celebrating the film Mac and Me, 1988. This is when I was a kid. It was very popular. I'm going back in time and celebrating some of these fun little. I don't know if it's considered a cult classic, but to me it is. So you could write to any of the themes, scenes, characters, and or quotes. You can go anywhere you want, even off topic from the topic itself. And if nothing else, just bring me a poem about aliens and I'll be happy, because it's another alien poem. We're onward with our alien theme. So bring me a poem you didn't bring me last week about aliens, and bring me a couple if you want, and we'll see if we can do a couple. And it'll be fun. So I hope to see you there. It's really an obscure kind of film. I don't really know if anybody will have seen it except for me. But it's fine. It's fine. We'll just celebrate it. And, Rack, do you have anything going on?
No. I got nothing. My mind
that's
is still stuck on the aliens. I was going to make an alien joke, but...
I know what it's like to be stuck on something and you can't think of anything else. We were in school today and the music teacher is teaching them about different types of music. And that's like my jam, right? Like, I'm like, I can name different various types of music. And I have like a list of like 70. And she does like this mad minute thing the first 2 minutes of class and says, because it's an ongoing lesson. And she says, okay, you got 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever, 5 minutes to go around the class, and each person will say a new one if they can think of one. If you can't think of one, press pass. I mean, say pass. So they're going. People are like, they already get all the decades. They get all like the known ones. And me, in the first round, I'm like, film score, right? Because film score music, that's a genre of music. So she goes through the whole class again, and she gets to me. And I'm so intent on trying to remember the word salsa, like salsa music, that I couldn't think of anything else. So I'm like, pass. And then afterwards, you know, a million things came to my mind, but I'm like, I couldn't get past the salsa. So I was like, nope, can't do it. Can't think of anything else now. So it was fun. I understand that. Okay. So now that, and Stephen, how much time do you have?
Not too much longer. I gotta work in the morning, so I'm gonna be
okay. Hitting
the road shortly.
All right. Well, just let me know when you're heading out, unless you're heading out now. I just don't want to. I want to give you a chance to say bye, because you know I want to say bye. But we're gonna. I'm gonna hop into. Huh?
What I was looking for, because I actually wrote a poem to that, because remember when we did the Seattle Underground thing, and I actually wrote a poem to Neptune's Kiss, and there was a hilarious photo I found of it, and I can't find the poem.
Oh, no. If you find it, you can bring it, and you could drop it, and you can read a second before you go. So look around and see if you can find it, if you want to. So we're on to Monday, and this would be the ancient Roman religion and myth. Luna is the divine embodiment of the moon. Who would have guessed? She is often presented as the female complement of the sun or soul, conceived as a god. Luna also sometimes is represented as an aspect of Roman triple goddess, Diva Triformis, so along with she is where am I? I have notes, so please forgive me. And that's all. That's actually the end of my notes. So, oh, her Greek counterpart is Selene. So, like I said, they have a counterpart. Her counterpart in Greek mythology will be Selene. So there we go. Just a little bit about her. Did you find it, Stephen?
No. Sucks when you can't remember the name of the poem.
You got to get those folders. You got to get those folders together, right?
Yeah.
So, Zach, any thoughts on this subject that we've talked about so far?
I love them all. I think that the sun gets too much attention, actually. I don't remember the name of the poem. Alice Stephen. I think I did one. I don't know if I published it on AP or not, though. But, you know, instead of going on about comparing someone to the sun, I went all moon about it. And, you know, I was happy with it. I like the idea. The most thing I like about it is I don't know how well known, you know, some people don't know that the scientific thing about the moon influencing the tides, that relationship between the ocean and the body of the moon, I think it is kind of amazing. And, you know, it plays well into the idea of, you know, relationships and things like that too for me. So it's always a fun thought to explore.
Awesome.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I have a poem.
Do you?
So it's not my poem. I have a poem. I should have read it earlier. I wasn't thinking about that. By Pee Wee Cussin. So it'll give, if Stephen still wants to look, he may. It'll give him a little bit of time. And since I gave Luna's Greek counterpart, I'll just say, of course, Souls is Helios in the Greek mythology. What group are we in? A team of voices. Okay. And here we go.
Isn't that Moonlight Sonata a classical piece of music?
Yeah. Moonlight Sonata. I was playing that the other day. I love that one. I love Moonlight Sonata. All right. This is... This is by Pee Wee Cussin, and you'll have to forgive me because I usually read ahead, so we're gonna kind of go with the flow here. This is, and let me just make sure he didn't give an, yeah, okay. Pluto's Soliloquy. Cleo Calliope, greatest of muses, give me the voice with which to recount my tale of vile, despicable treachery. Give me the words, dear nieces, so all may know of betrayal and plight of Pluto. Be revered by earth dwellers, not feared. Take scepter, seat, crown from bastard brother. Rise and take my place amongst Olympians, my place at the seat, scepter in hand. Children, count yourself blessed and lucky to hear the words of the fiery-tongued lord of Hades. Yes, I shall sing to you of my betrayal at birth. Firstly, by my father, no more removed Saturn's jaw than banished by brash brother youthful. Throne belongs rightly the eldest son, does it not? I ask why I sit here to guard your accursed souls whilst Jupiter runs amok rampantly, impregnating every female and animal in sight. This is our deity we hold in hot hands high, that tree manes of the mountain, the seat of the gods at the table, deity whose oracle all pray to at temples. Errantly, I get ahead of myself, children. Allow me digress as your mortal ears shall rapture at exposure to my godly vocals. Hermes of the winged feet set me brothers, exception of Jupiter. Fetch me the sisters too. We shall determine who rightly rules. With the scepter alone I won't defeat him, but with trident of Neptune. Speaking up, Zegras interjected. Treacherous Jupiter's reign, long overdue, under guise of benevolence, he is treacherous, incestuous, patriarchal, homicidal, and lascivious. Point is of note, Zegras, by means who lords over this realm, besides puny weak mortal overworlders, ears bleed out with agony at sound of noble vocals, might just as well leave them in the sirens or nymphs of fates of humors. Shortly our messenger be returning with my family to us. Bigger mermaids we must fry, great white whales to fillet, crown and scepter to claim. None among us cares to hear yet again about Saturn, my father, eating me, and upon my release, Jupiter subjugating me, this wretched plane. Time at hand and evil afoot, Zigaris. Loose the Titans from the planet's maw. Upon Jupiter's fall, with help of Neptune's trident, we will imprison them. Enmeshed in the braids of Venus, locks they shan't break. Have Atlas at the ready. End poem. This is a great poem. I do apologize for that little stumble. I think I handled it pretty well. I thought this was cool. For one, he intertwines Greek and Roman names, and they can be interchangeable, but I like how he used them. Usually they're not interchangeable in the same poem, and I like how he goes back and forth so that you kind of get the idea. You learn a little bit, so you're like, okay, you know, if you're not familiar, he says, okay, well, what's Pluto? If you're not familiar with Roman and you're only familiar with Greek, you can say in his poem, oh, yeah, that's Hades. Of course, I love how he brings in, first of all, that perspective. I love the perspective. I'm the firstborn, I should have all the glory, but why am I not? Of course, it's Jupiter, you know, or Zeus. He's the youngest born, and he gets all the glory. What kind of madness is that? So I agree with him. I mean, it doesn't say that he's the youngest here, but knowing the stories, I understand his plight here. And I like how he brings in the Titans, and he brings up how, you know, they were swallowed. They were all swallowed, you know, which is in the Greek mythology. And they're all swallowed, and then at last Jupiter and or, he would say, Why is the name just escaping me? I just said it. of course, he comes out and he saves them all. And I like how he brings in that. He brings in his domain. He brings in Hermes, which is, I love Hermes. The messenger god, which is Greek also. So he brings in Hermes, and he brings in Poseidon, he brings in Neptune. He brings in a lot of them, actually. But he also brings in the little bit of stories as well, which, where was it? There's so much here, so I'm just trying to. There was one part that he brought in. Oh, yeah, he mentions their voice. So, like, if you ever read anything in, you know, in Greek mythology, their voices are supposed to be, like, really, like, human voices and God's voices are supposed to be very, very different. So one thing, I had just read, what was this book, Circe, and it was like a reinvention of Circe. And one of the things with her was her voice. They all said, oh, you have such an awful voice. And all the gods said, your voice sounds so terrible. And it was because she had a human's voice. So then when she gets banished to her island, of course, if you know anything about that, one thing that helps humans not be afraid of her is her voice, because she sounds like a human. So he brought that in very subtly, but if you kind of know the backdrops of different stories, you kind of say, oh, yeah, I remember that, and that reminds me of the story of Circe and how her voice sounds normal, and that's why, you know, humans weren't really, really afraid of her, which is pretty awesome there. And I think, you know, she gets brought into the story when Odysseus goes there before he gets stranded. So it's pretty cool. And then, of course, at the end, I like how he brings in, I already said how Saturn, how he was eating him. And then, of course, he brings in Atlas, of course, and him holding up to the sky. And I don't know where, I just recently read something too. I forget what I was reading. I think it was a children's book. And it was about Atlas and Hercules and him tricking Hercules to hold up the sky for a few minutes and then Hercules going to trick him back. So he brings in a wealth of different stories into one poem, which I think is great. And he doesn't overwhelm them with the details, but people that kind of know bits and pieces can kind of gather it together. And I like the perspective, like, hey, I'm gonna rule, and this is my right because I'm the first son, and he's pretty jaded. This is really cool. I really appreciate it. And I don't know if Stephen's still here. He is. Stephen, What do you think?
Yeah, I like this, the way he kind of brought in all that mythology with the gods. And then he also was able to give it a little peppering of alliteration, too, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah, I think it's very well done. And I'm going to have to hit the road.
Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen. And have a great night. And thanks for coming.
Thank you. Take it easy. Catch you later, Rick.
Good night, dude.
And your thoughts?
Oh, hi. I was wondering if you were going to call on me or not. I enjoyed the detail that he went into, because, you know, when you bounce back and forth, not him specifically, but in general, you know, like you said, there's Roman and there's Greek and there's this story and that story, and, you know, this movie and that movie, and it gets very confusing. You know, which one is which and who is who and what is what, and, oh, yeah, this one's related to that one, and then the Titans, and then, oh, wait a minute, this one doesn't like that one, and this one invested this thing, and, oh, it really gets confusing. He was very clear on his story and where he was going and the direction of it. And he used, you know, he did include a lot of detail for such in relation to the length of the poem, I think. So I really appreciated it for that. There was a wealth of information in this, and it was beautiful. He did a great job with the language and you know, because even just using, I think, all those names is a little daunting, because it's like, okay, wait a minute, which one am I talking about now? You know, you almost forget, like your salsa dilemma. It's like, oh, who was that again? it gets frustrating.
Yeah, I think he did it very, very well. And I have read different versions, because there's obviously this Homer's version, but there's different versions, and I've read different versions of the Iliad, of course, and the Odyssey. And this year I recently read, like I said, Circe, and I couldn't remember the name when I was talking. I couldn't remember the author, but it's by Madeline Miller, and I think they're just talking about, or a couple years ago, I don't know if they ever did it, starting eight-part miniseries on HBO from her book. It's like an adaption of it. It's a very different adaption. And so I had some of that stuff fresh in my mind, because I had just read Circe, and I just read another one by her that had to do with the fall of Troy. So I happen to have a little bit in my mind more fresh than I think you know, I may have if I didn't read. And I just read Tales with my goddaughter. I had just went to the, you know, Tales of Greek Mythology for Children, because I like to read to her. And we had just gotten through a book this year. It was in 2023. So I have it a little more palatable, I think. Plus, I read all the Percy Jacksons, and like I said, I did read multiple versions of the Iliad and Odyssey, because, I mean, it depends who translates it, right?
Yeah.
And who you're going to like better. So I have I wouldn't say the best grasp, but over the years it has something that I like to read. So it was cool to see all those little bits and pieces in his poem. You know what I think, too? And I see him on the board. Thank you, Pee-wee, for bringing this. I think this is such a great poem. And it sparks a lot of conversation, obviously, because I haven't stopped commenting on it yet. But I want to know, you know, Pluto/Hades, he feels so gypped, right? Because he's the firstborn, and then obviously he gets overthrown. But I want to know, like, they even took away the planet. Right? It's not a planet anymore. So all these other gods, you know, they got Mark Tree, you know, they've got Jupiter, and, you know, they've got all the Mercury and all these different things. And Pluto, poor Pluto, it's not even considered a planet anymore.
Downgraded.
He's got double ships. So I feel like he's not, you know, he's not living his best life, I don't think.
That's a brilliant observation.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have this. There's this parody. Oh, my gosh. It's so funny. Pluto will always be a planet in my heart. I don't know how to undo that. Like, I just don't know how to. But, seen this. I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, and it's not working for me, so I apologize. I'll stop trying to multitask because it's not working. I watched this parody, and, you know, everybody loves that new film and that song. And even if you haven't seen the film, I'm sure that you heard the song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, right? Have you heard that? We don't talk about Bruno, right?
Okay.
I'm still thinking
about Pluto and remembering the episode of the Big Bang Theory.
It's gonna connect. It's gonna hold on. I want to hear your Big Bang story, but it's gonna connect. One second. So they have this song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, in this children's Disney film, and then this really brilliant guy on YouTube did a parody, and it's called We Don't Talk About Pluto, and it talks about how Pluto was downgraded and all these, like, We Don't Talk About Pluto, and then he goes in 2003, like, it says where it changed and why it's not. So it's educational, but it's also really, really funny, and it's quite hilarious. And if you are just running on YouTube and you're looking for something just to kill time, and, you know, you want to be entertained, it's quite hilarious. But that's what it reminded me of, too. But go ahead. What happened on Big Bang Theory?
Actually, it's kind of related to what you were saying, because Sheldon got mad at, what was his name, Neil deGrasse Tyson, the one that downgraded Pluto. So he had a thing against him when he's like, I liked Pluto. So he was mad at the person, you know. It was one of those, like, you know, if you were really a nerd and you liked the planet and everything, and you met the guy that downgraded the planet, it's like, you know, you might want to punch him in the nose. So it's just one of those things. I don't know. It was relatable, and if you didn't understand or know about, you know, the backstory of downgrading Pluto and whatnot, they kind of introduce you to it in a funny way.
That's funny, yeah. And I feel like I would really like that show, but I just don't have the time. Like, I always want to watch it, but I don't watch enough TV. I try to, but then when I do, it's very specific, and it's very, like, I'm putting this on for this, because I love watching TV, and I love films, and I love shows, but I'm probably going to, I mean, you know me, I'm probably going to read the book instead and take the time for that. And, of course, Pee-wee, you are right. I forgot the Aeneid. I apologize. But I think I grasped most of your poem, which was good. It was a story. So, I mean, I think I did pretty good. But I did forget to mention that. Thank you. He knows his stuff, I think. And
there's also a D&D connection to it, you know, like being on a quest. You know, if you think of it like that and the story of it, you know, you could always relate back to D&D in some fashion because, you know, I think you're a fan.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. I might be a fan of D&D. Someone had said they were like, you have a – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so any time I hear, you know, the ideas of, you know, the gods or, you know, the things that they do, or even the adventures, it's like roll for initiative, you know, or roll for damage. that's in the back of my head because, you know, I grew up with Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, I didn't, like, play it incessantly, but I see the appeal of it and the parallels to the world and the storylines and so much. It just lends itself to you know, storytelling, I think, in a brilliant, brilliant way. Because it puts rules, you know. I mean, writing is imagination and everything, but there's a skeletal structure to it that you know, if you adhere to it, it makes it more cohesive and more relatable.
Yeah, I wonder if there is. I mean, I'm sure there is. I've never seen it. So they have, like, different, like, D&D goes, like, they have the game Nightmare, and that's like a D&D RPG game that's based, but it's more like about vampires. I wonder if they have like a D&D based game about like Roman and Greek mythology. I want like something like that. I bet they do. I mean, I never searched it before, but I bet they do. But I'm a really big fan of different like fairy tales. The same fairy tale, just different versions from different cultures, and you can see like Italian fairy tales in different continents. I went through this whole kick, and I think I'm still on it because I still have a few to read, but about reading them from each, not just from Germany, not just from the Grimm's brothers, but from other sources, because I think I really love adaptions, and that's the one great thing about Greek mythology, Roman mythology. They're still making adaptions. There was this one. I wasn't really into it. It was a young reader's adaption, and it was, oh, my gosh, what was it? I have to think about what it was now. If you give me a few minutes, I can probably, I mean, it wasn't a huge, it was okay, and I think because even as an older, as an adult, if new series come out, even if they're young readers, I still like to read them because, I like writing children's poems, and I like being aware. And some, even though they're young readers, they're great. I mean, Harry Potter, right, was a young readers, and it's a great series. But there was this one series, I wasn't too into it, but they brought in Greek mythology in a new way. And I'm not going to be able to probably, I'm not going to remember what it is. But I'll tell you when I remember. That was it. The other one by Madeline Miller, which was The Fall of Troy, it was A Song of Achilles. I read that this year. It was another adaption. And I thought that was a pretty cool book. It was very different. It was very forward-thinking. So if people aren't willing to see characters in a different light and they do not like adaptions, I would not say that book might be for you. Oh, here it was the Alchemist series by Michael Scott. There was, I don't know, five of them maybe. That was a young reader series, but I wasn't too into that. I think that if I was younger, some young reader books I can get into and I'll be okay, but some are just too much angst and I can't do it. And it's great writing and I'm sure kids would like it, but then with me, I'm just like, okay, this, we're done now. So.
Some of it even goes back to the etymology of words, you know, like the Achilles heel. You know, when you read the story, I think that's brilliant. I love things like that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I love about it. And that's why I wanted to do the show, because like people literally say this every day. They say, what's today? Wednesday. And they don't realize where those words come from and where what it's derived from. And I think it's really cool when you stop and you think and you say, okay, where am I getting this word and what is it named after and what's happening? And I just think it's really cool. So, I got one more. I am going to read. Pee Wee gave a second and I am going to write for, I mean, I am going to read for that. I'm going to do a lot of reading. I was silly and I didn't pre-read, and Pee Wee, please forgive me. I always pre-read because I tell you, I have a little bit of dyslexia, which most people know. I don't say a lot on air anymore because I think everybody knows, and I have, I get a little nervous when I read, when I haven't pre-read, but, Rack will talk for a second so I can just look this over.
Yeah, I've been known to talk for a second or two.
yeah, okay.
You know that old joke, dyslexic walks into a bra? Anyway.
No, no. Talk about Greek mythology.
Oh, Greek mythology. I don't know that I have any jokes about Greek. Well, I guess, you know, if I'm talking, I tend to lean towards jokes, but it doesn't have to be about the jokes, does it? I don't know. Greek mythology finds its way into a lot of different things. You know, you could even find food in Greek mythology. I tend to lean towards the food a lot too. You know, you ever wonder, like, the things that they eat, you know, shish kebabs and, you know, fried fish and all the other fun stuff that they do when they're out there roughing it, the grains and the herbs and how that evolved. I don't know. I like to think of some of the dishes as being going back that far, you know, the idea of boiling grains and where they learned stuff like that from. Or, you know, there's, you know, let's combine food and humor and say, who was the first person to look at a lobster and say, ooh, I want to eat that? You know, it's one of those things that I don't know. I guess that's not Greek at all, is it?
You're free. You're good. Thanks. You're so wonderful. You're so
random
funny.
Random.
I have to. No, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. I dropped it twice. Okay, here we go. This one's got a lot of alliteration. This is so fun. Okay. This is in, you're going to have to pay attention to this. It's a little bardic, I would say. So here we go. Harlequins, harlots, and lutes, lyres, lie. I love it already. Let me do that again. Harlequin's Harlot and Lute's Liar's Lie by Pee Wee Cousin. In suspect suspicion of some suspicious traditions, was it all just superstition? And Harlequin's Harlot is seeking a soft spot she may stop to rest her eyes. Dancing through the circus skies, looted liar's lie, was received a vision quite cordially captivating. This performance permeated ascension to sky. Ephemeral, elegant, effervescent, although only one, the true seed of divinity, sensationally relatable but incapacitably after show, which was who no one knew. Cavorting and carousing, craving her home, is a third faded cursed obscenities. Lasciviously larcenous, and all she stole from us, the lutes, lyres, lied, it's true. Deceptively distinguished, liar didn't take to this, vacuumed air via chute. Taking one last bow, looking around, then curling up the ground. Nothing was left, you see. Scent of cheap perfume, the liar's lute, Miss Lovely Harlequin's Harlot, while she was nowhere to be found. Patriarchy, you see, changes the face of history, makes men the one greatly askew, needing review. The tale goes oft, he is but a buffoon. Harlequin's Harlot, or Soul, and Varlet, you may well know as the Sun. Ever so fickle, a face lute's lyre, phases and stages, we call her Luna, the Moon. Oh my gosh, I wish I would have. I'm going to practice that and bring it next time. I'm going to practice this poem. No, I'm serious. Even if we're not going to do this, I'm going to practice this poem because I love this kind of writing. I love. I mean, if it's okay with you, Pee Wee, I'm going to practice this a couple times. And my next show, which is in a month, it's not going to be about this topic, but I'm going to bring this again because I'm feeling like this is a challenge. I really love tongue-twisting poems, and I think this is so brilliant. I'm really excited about this, and I wish that I practiced it a lot more than I just did because this was so fun. And I mean, I don't think I did bad, but I was a little muddled in parts of it, and I think I could do better. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to practice it. I may even do a recording. And then I'm going to bring it on the next month's show, and I'm going to play it again just because I think this is quite brilliant, and I want to just really give it praise because this is so fun. I don't even know where I would start. First of all, I love the bardic feel. Look, you got a gold, and I can't, deservingly so in this contest. So congratulations on the gold. I loved the idea of Harlequin's harlot and the lyre, which I just really love, the lute's lyre. I loved how you brought that in. You brought in soul at the very end. And, oh, my gosh, the ease, the ephemeral, elegant, effervescent, these were fun to say. It was really, I think you could hear the smile in my voice that I thought this was fun to read and fun to listen to and creative. And it was, remember how I just said, Rack, I think it's like very bardic and I think you're going to like it because it's like a bard song.
Yeah.
I was not lying. I think it was so permeated. I think this is one of my favorite parts. Quite cordially captivating. This performance permeated ascension to the sky. I don't know why. I just loved it. Well, I know why. It's brilliant. That's why I loved it. But it's just really, really fun. All right. I really enjoyed this, Pee-wee. Thank you so much. I am going to practice. I am going to record it. I'm going to bring it next time because I feel like I can do it better, and I feel like I want to be have a challenge because this is so fun. Rack, what do you think?
Yeah, I love your use of the language, harlots and varlets, lutes and lyres. I used to do it on purpose, you know, in conversation when someone would say lyre, I'd say, they don't look like a stringed instrument to me. And I would get these blank stares most of the time. I swear, I'd get these blank stares, and I reveled in it. So to mention it as an actual instrument is just, you know, it adds to the grin on my face. But you know, the language is you know, what's the term? Theme appropriate. It fits the time frame that you're talking about. I also enjoy the alliteration. Sometimes I do it on purpose. Sometimes I'll spatter it throughout. But you know, this definitely sounds like I could see someone sitting there with the lute and you know, even like maybe even Jethro Tull standing on one leg, the flute. I really would have loved to hear, you know. You got to do a recording, Pee-wee, and try and sing it for us.
Oh my gosh. So I used to love, let's say, I haven't done in a while. We all loved, I think everybody knew and loved John Coe. And I think he was a well-known name on AP. And he's a friend, inspiration for years for me with his wonderful work because he had entered every single one of my Shutter Button contests, and if not the majority, I would say 98% of them. From day one, he was a supporting writer, and I loved reading his work because it was so intricate. And it was so ba-bump, 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 tongue-twisty, like twist on words, and just so, so fun. And he loved rhyme, and he loved just this expression of word twisting. I don't even know how to express it, but when I would enter his poems, it would give me, yeah, when I entered his when I entered his contest, I don't always write humor. I write kids' children's poetry and young readers' poetry, but that's the only time I really can do humor. But I often would put myself out of the box when it came to John Coe's contest because I knew that he loved humor, rhyme, and I was just like, I'm going to be as silly as I can be. And I realized through entering in many of his contests and doing it, it gave me the freedom to write poems like in this genre, to have such a fun, tongue-twisting, lyrical flow that a play on words, use of alliteration. And I know that when I have people, like, I don't really want people reading it, except for me, because Because I practiced it and I know it. And I'm like, because the cadence of it, if you mess up the cadence of it, I mean, it's still going to be beautiful, but you can't really appreciate it, how it's really meant to be read, unless you're cemented in it and you're not stumbling. And that's why I want to do it again, because I think that it needs more appreciation without the stumbling. Because I know for ones that I do, like Hatter loves those ones that I do that are all tongue-twisty. I know that if I hear somebody kind of stumbling, and I don't blame them, but I'm like, oh, you're losing it now. You lost the joke. you lost the pun line, right? So I'm going to practice this one. But it was really fun. Thank you, Pee-wee. I really liked it. And it was on topic. I'm so invested in the form and the way and the structure that it was written. I also really, I want you to know, I also really like the topic, but because words are just words without the context and wittiness behind them, right? So it's lovely as well. But I think we have someone here. They weren't here for the poem, but I'll tell her that we're going to bring it next week. I mean, next month too, Ron. I practice it more. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
How are you?
Hanging in there. How you doing?
Good, good. Archaic rack might be the word that you were looking for, archaic language. Pee-wee, that's what Pee-wee said. Deb, we're having a lot of fun here, I have to tell you.
That's a good thing.
How are you today?
Not too bad. I
good.
A little hectic. How are you today?
I am good. We just got done reading Pee Wee's second poem, and I love it so much that I want to practice it and bring it next month. And that's what I'm going to do, even if we're not on the topic of what we are now, but just it's fun. It was really fun. If you get a chance, Deb, I know you weren't here, you should check it out. It is fun.
I was just reading it. Aside from the fact that the poem itself is really awesome, the phrasing and everything, but it's not an easy task to win a gold medal from Pam, and I see that he got the gold, so that's a really big deal. She's very fair, but very tough when she judges.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Deb, did you do your homework?
Don't I always do my homework?
Okay.
Teacher,
all right.
Darkness,
all right.
Ms. Dark.
I love it. I love it. Like, you guys have a little bit of time. I know. I'm going to write you a note. All right. So, Deb, do you want to talk about whatever you want to talk about before or after? Well, I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to tell you. You're up next. You can talk about four. You can talk about after. You can talk about both. You can talk both. You can do whatever you want. You have the floor.
Oh, well, for starters, I want to say this was a really fun topic. The video that you twisted our arms and forced us to watch was very impressive. And, like, some of it I had heard before and some of it I didn't. But, of course, being born on a Thursday, on Thursday, that's one of the days that I would have read stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
And then to turn around and give me the opportunity to write to one of my favorite little rhymes, songs, poems, whatever you want to call it, in the Monday's Child, was a fun little extra. So I sort of combined Thursday and Thursday's Child, and this is what I got. And it's called Thursday's Child Has Far to Go, which is a line from the poem.
Classic.
Here we go. Rain cloud sprinklers watered neighborhood lawns and shrouded the golden neon sun's glowing rays as the echo from the thunder announced my birth. Lightning flashed hot white and marked the display. the nursery rhyme song called Me Thursday's Child, born the fifth weekday, folks once called Thursday. Now, with many places to go and many people to see, leather shoes walk beneath the sky's blue periwinkle, not gray. With crocus, daffodil, and milkweeds bordering the yard, all the dragonfly and butterfly wings fit for their air ballet. Blooming lilac bushes and purple flower blossoms in view, perfuming warm May breezes as the baby bunnies play. Catbirds, sparrows, and goldfinches sing from the birdbath. Then Thor rattles the ground, announcing rain on the way. End poem.
Awesome. This was brilliant, Seb. And I love that when, like, you know, people say, like, I'm a Pisces, and, like, in Chinese zodiac, what am I, a tiger? You know, now, to think about it, when you think about something personal, what day were you born? Well, I was born on Thursday. I was born on Odin's day. You can even go as far to say, to kind of connect yourself, and it's kind of fun to connect ourselves, I think, through history. And I love that you did that. I love that you took this in a personal direction. You related it to you, to the day that you were born. You picked that day. You know, now you could be like, oh, I was born on the day of the god of thunder, you know, and just, I don't know, it kind of brings maybe an empowerment. I love the way that you wrote it in these couplets, and that you kind of said the nursery rhyme so-called, Me Thursday's Child. And I think that's bringing something so personal that you're being able to share with us, I think, and kind of saying, this is my history, this is where I'm going from. And I really, really love that it's personal. And the flowers that you bring, I love crocus flowers. And the daffodils and the milkweed. My mother has such a green thumb. Anybody that follows any of my shutter button contest knows that I love taking pictures of flowers, especially my mother's flowers. And I often will run contests with hers because you'll often see a different name. This picture was taken by Sandra. And they'll be like, oh, who's that? Well, that's my mom. And she has such a green thumb. She can really, her gardens are amazing. I did not inherit that. I feel like everything. A cucumber survived last summer, and I was so happy that the cucumber plant didn't die last summer. It was the first time I didn't kill something. So I was so thrilled. And the mint, half the mint survived. I killed the other half. But I appreciate flowers so much, and I just love them. I just can't keep any plants or anything alive. But I love that you brought this in the blooming lilac bushes and the purple blossoms, and how you bring in the dragonfly and butterfly wings fit for their air ballet. Brilliant. I especially like that. I think those might be my two favorite lines, with the flowers and the air ballet paired with the personal touch of the where you got, you know, the Thursday child. And your day of the week. I thought this was so cool. I really, really liked the way. And, by the way, too, if I may, I know I'm sorry, it never ends, how you speak of rain and hardship. Yeah, he's laughing because I'm really talkative today. And the idea of there is hardship through life, but we all get through it. And I feel like there's a gem of hope in your poem. And I love that. I love that kind of positive thinking where even when the ground rattles, we're gonna make it. Really, really brilliant. I'm gonna get a comment from Rack, and then if you want to make any additional comments, you can. So, yeah, Rack, you can talk now. Sorry, buddy.
No apologies necessary. You say you know, about talking. I think it's a matter of perspective. I like that you can be effusive and excited about things like that. I think that's why people will come to the shows and listen, because anyone could read the poems. It's the excitement that they generate in the conversation that evolves from it, I think, is why. And that's what you touch on, you know. And Deb brings us something like this, and she mentions Thursday, and she makes that connection, you know, throughout, you know, whatever genre you want to talk about, whether it's humor or writing or whatever. Well, I guess writing is humor or whatever. But, you know, that connection, however tenuous, is the thread that ties things together sometimes. And, you know, it makes it relatable to anyone that was born on a Thursday. So, you know, that just in the beginning to bring you in. But, you know, then she talks about the colors and everything. And I love that she mentions that nursery rhyme because, you know, these things, that they get lost. You know, people don't remember or, you know, they hear it and it touches that spot in your brain where, you know, maybe when you were little, your mom read it to you and you never heard it since. It's like, why does that sound so familiar? And then someone's like, oh, that's a poem. And you're like, oh, really? And then, boom, there it is. And then you go in and you learn and you go back to it and you know, it opens your mind. So to include something like that is genius. And again, you did it in a way that you actually acknowledge it too, that it's not like, you know, oh, I'm taking credit for making that up. No, you're mentioning the other poem too, so I think you're paying homage to it. You know, it's a wonderful tribute to the old poetry, and you did it in a beautifully poetic way.
Thank you so much. That's a fabulous comment. But I have a question. When I dialed in, did Sky call you archaic? Is she trying to say you're old?
No, she was talking about a word that I was trying to come up with. But yeah, I'm old as dirt.
Not me too. Okay, because I was like, archaic. That's different. I don't think anyone's ever called me that.
I'm
but
old.
Yeah.
I just had a birthday. I'm creeping up on the
floor. We all get stuck with those guys. Guys, oh, guys. That's
so
like
this is what I'm calling it. So
yeah, well, we backed Crystal up a bit last night. We were trying to remember how old she was, and I said, I think she's 22. Well, she's 25, so, you know, leave it to me. I'll just chop some years off for you and say you're 31.
Sarah Allitt, she met me at 27, I think. We've known each other for quite some time, and so I'm still 27. So I'm still we've been friends for like 10 years.
It's 10th anniversary, 27th birthday.
So every time she's like, oh, happy 27th birthday. Like for 10 years, she's done the same thing every year. And then I'm like, why do you keep saying 27? She's like, well, and it never clicked. That was when we met. She goes, well, that's how old you were when we met. So that's it. I'm like, all right.
Well, when you're in your fabulous 50s. You'll be glad she's calling you 27.
Well, I think Rack would really appreciate this, and I think that you can now because you're such a brilliant D&D player now. I'm going to take you into the, you know, just into my, like, little D&D fold, and so you're going to get this. So from now on, I don't want you to say I'm 37, all right? So you're 37 years old. You don't say that because that's just – you're that many years old. I want you to say, I'm level 37, all right? I'm level 37. In D&D, oh, we haven't gotten to levels yet in D&D. Okay, Deb, so once you get your character and you know your race and you know your class, and I know you're brilliant with those, every time you play a campaign, in every session or, like, I don't know, it depends who your DM is, but at all the sessions you play, all your feats you get, you gain levels, and the higher level you are, the more damage you can do, the more power you have, the spells you have, the more powerful you are. Basically, you want to be a higher level, and it's like gaining experience.
That's exactly what it is. At least they used to call it experience points. The same way you have strength and whatever, you get experience points. So when you go on adventures and you solve problems and you do things, you gain experience that way. And then certain levels have, I think they cap them per class. So like, you know, when you're a magician, some classes are harder to level up than others. So you need more experience to level up. You know, because it's harder to be, you know, a tumbler or a thief than, you know, an assassin or whatever, you know, however you want to look at it. They acknowledge the differences in the traits and the goings on, I guess you'd say. It's one, and it adds to the character too.
Yeah, so from now on, I'm level 37. I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear I'm 37 years old. I'm level 37.
I take it that you're a D&D fan as well, Rock and Tour.
Yeah, I used to DM when I was younger.
Oh yeah, Rock and I, we let D&D geek all the time. He's probably Steven and Rock and I and Silk. Silk is a real in-depth D&D as well. And so they know what I'm saying. So it's kind of fun. All right, Seth, I do want to hear what you learned. If you learned anything else besides Thursday, I would like to give you the floor, and I would like you to plug shows. But before we do that, I want to say hello to Hatta. Hello, Hatta.
Hey, guys. Hey, so what are these days of the weeks and the myth therein you speak of?
Okay, well, I'm going to give Deb a moment. I've been talking a lot, so not that I don't mind talking more, but I want to give Deb a chance. She did her homework, okay? So I want Deb to say anything if she wants. And you don't have to, Deb, but if you want to, what you got from the film in your words, if you would, if you want to. You can say no thank you, Miss Sky.
No. It's just that, like I said, I had – some of the stuff I had known, especially about Thursday because of being born on Thursday, but the rest I pretty much didn't. And I thought that it was cool how you could take any of the days, but let's go with mine. And there's a Roman tradition
God.
Or myth that goes with it. And there's Norse and it's Thursday. But it's said in a different way by each culture or country, however you want to list it. And I thought that was pretty cool. But in general, they wind up tying to thunder no matter how they describe it, which, I mean, as long as I'm inside and it's not going to strike me, there's something very beautiful about thunderstorms. And when I was little, we had this big picture window, and there was a cow pasture across the street. So you got this big open sky and the clouds and the thunder and the lightning. It was like I didn't watch TV those nights. Instead, I sat in the formal living room and looked out the picture window to see these storms. And I always wondered if I liked the storm so much because I was born on Thor's Thunder Day, you know, so it was really cool. And on a side note, as far as the Monday's Child, it was originally considered a fortune-telling song. So it was like you were getting your fortune told. And I mean, it's just a little one. Monday's child is fair of face. Tuesday's child is full of grace. Wednesday's child is full of woe. Thursday's child has far to go. Friday's child is loving and giving. Saturday's child works hard for a living. And the child born on the Sabbath day is bonny and blithe and good and gay. And it's just a tiny little poem, but I think it's one that my mom, one of the ones that she would read, and it stuck with me. And yeah. I used to think I hated to be Thursday's child because it would say that she had far to go, which at first I took as, you know, well, she can't get much lower, so she's got far to go type of, you know what I mean? And I was absolutely delighted to find out that the actual fortune-telling interpretation is not a negative thing. It's the child born on Thursday has a long and successful life ahead of them. They will go far in life in terms of longevity and or having a great success or fame, the traditional interpretation of the poem, and that made me better. You know what I mean? I felt so much better. I no longer thought I was, you know, in desperate need of help to be a better person, you know. So it's just a little play on how you interpret something, you know. But I have heard this song or this rhyme many, many times, and wasn't until I was doing different kind of research, my homework, for this poem that I found out that it was a fortune-telling song. I never knew that part, so I thought that was really cool. And as far as shows, there might be a show tomorrow, but I didn't see Matt Big Brother
on
any of the topic boards.
Oops.
I don't know.
Oops.
Oops.
Doing Van Morrison.
And,
we're going to sit and do Van Morrison.
There you go. He's going to educate us on Van Morrison tomorrow night. And then on Sweet's not back until April, so no show Thursday. And Liquid Damage is doing her now second of her two times a month show, Open Poetry, Friday night. And Saturday night is part two of Hatter's topic, which is light. And then Monday is Personal Prompt Monday. And the quotes featured this week will be by Xylophonic Blue. So anxious to see what Hal's words will inspire in everyone. And thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, I think it's so sweet, like, things like that. And I'm going to jump off topic. I am going to answer your question, Hatter, but I'm going to jump quickly off topic of my topic and jump into quickly what Dev was saying.
Sure.
And I have this poem, and my mother used to sing this old folk song to me. And this is, like, such a – I understand your beautiful connection because my mother used to sing this song, and it goes – oh, my gosh. I'm having a hard time today. Good night, Irene. So she would sing, good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. And it's by Levy something like that. And it's an old folk song. And it's definitely not a children's song. When you hear it, you're like, why did your mom sing this to you? It's about him going out cheating and drinking alcohol. But she changed the lyrics. So, and I don't usually say my name on air, but I will for this one purpose. But she would go, good night, Bonnie Jean, good night, Bonnie Jean, I'll see you in the morning. And she kind of just implemented those words. And then sometimes she would just say Irene. I don't know why, maybe I got confused at one point. My name was Irene, but she used to sing that to me, and she would use my name and Irene interchangeably, and she would sing to me that every night before I went to bed, and she would sing it in, I'm not doing it justice, the tune, but she would just do that, and it's an old folk song, and it was just so precious to me, so I do think I have a poem with that in it, but... So
Oliver sing a song?
So Oliver sang a song, and that is what I was named after. So my grandmother wanted to name my mother Bonnie Blue from Gone with the Wind, because that was her favorite film. And then my mother took that and kind of switched around. It was like she wanted to do Jean or just Bonnie or Blue. And my mother heard that song by Oliver, and it's really funny because no one ever knows that song, Hatter. And that is the song. Like, no one ever gets that. And then I say it, and believe me, a lot of people sing my name. They'll be like, Billie Jean is, but they'll put my name in. Not Marla. They'll put everything. But, you know, my phone, my service. It's awful. I hate it. But that is the one. It's Jean, the hills are alive and green. Run, if you will, to the top of the hill. Bonnie, Jean. That's the one. That's what I'm named after. Partially.
Jean, roses are red. And all the trees have gone green. And the clouds are so low you can touch them. And so, come out to the meadow. Jean. My aunt used to play that song a lot. I can sing it, but I won't.
I don't ever get that sung to me because no one ever knows it. I've gotten a plethora of songs.
I do.
That one I don't. You did. Yes, so you guys are the first ones. My mother told me that when she was younger, she heard that song come out, and she pictured her daughter running through the fields. And it came to her in a vision.
The first time I heard your real name,
I envisioned myself. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. All right. Well, my birthday in July was always blazing hot, and we were miniature golfing, the summertime miniature golfing, and I remember the song in the car. But I think they were playing it on the loudspeaker, the miniature golf. That's what it was.
It's a very nice song. Yeah. And I don't mind it too much because it wasn't overplayed. Like for me, because everybody has a need to sing, or they say like they just have a need to play with my name, like I've never, or sing to me like I've never heard it before. They're like, it's the first time they made it. Yeah. Like, you're funny. Like it's like brilliant to them, and no one ever does that one. So I'm glad you have. Thank you, Adam. But I just looked it up, and I was curious, Deb. I'm still going to explain it to you, Hatter. I haven't left you, but Deb, one more thing. I was curious because because this little poem you have, and so I couldn't remember what day that I was born on, so I had to look up my birthday and what year, and it's a Tuesday, so I'm a child of grace. And
I see that.
It's funny because Jean means God is gracious, and so it's like double whammy. And then, of course, everybody knows Bonnie means beautiful. That's in Scottish. That's not Bonnie Lass. So,
remember that picture that your mom sort of enhanced it, like she changed it a bit. And I thought that the little girl in the picture was you, and I included a line there about.
Oh yeah.
The roses are red.
Bring the poem. Bring the poem.
Something.
Let's do it. So that is a picture of my niece, but she's like my little mini-me. But go ahead, put it up there, Deb.
It was
and have her
thought
find a poem. I'm sorry, Deb?
No, I was going to say, I thought that it was you, and I tailored the whole poem around thinking that it was Little Sky, and it wasn't, but I did include a reference to that song.
So what is everybody? What day of the week was everybody born?
Thursday.
So hold on. Before we get into that, and I do want to get into that, Heather, I just want to tell you my topic,
because I
keep pushing you off. The topic was where words derive from, and I really like it because we say these words every day, where do they derive from? So there's a couple things where the idea of what names they derive from. So one derision, and they're all linked together. So, you know, they are from the Greek. Yes.
Tell me, you're cackalacking a little bit. Say the words again.
So I'm not sure what you missed, but where, the days of the week, where
the whole,
names have derived
that's
from.
What
so they're all interchangeable. They're all around. They're all submerged in the same, you know, in pagan religion, really. But you think about the days of the week, they're rooted in, obviously, the planets, so Jupiter,
right.
Mars, Pluto, right? And that's all tied in with Roman mythology, right? So the Roman gods, Neptune, a.k.a. Poseidon in Greek. So that's also all rooted in Norse mythology. So you're going back, and you keep going back, and you keep going back. So when you think of Sunday, soul, which is the Greek, soul is the, I'm sorry, not the Greek, the Roman god of the sun, and it's Sunday, or in Greek mythology, Helios, right? And you think of Monday and Luna from the moon in the ancient, the ancient goddess, not Greek, Roman, thank you, Roman goddess, Luna, or Selene in Greek mythology. And then you think Tuesday, you know, tri, which is different, interchangeable to Greek, and that's the day of Aries or Mars, right? So the god of war. So Tuesday is based on that. And then Wednesday, Mercury or Hermes in Greek, but it's also Woden. So if you say Woden's day, you really are, and it translates into Wednesday. It's really Woden's day. Thursday, I think Deb kind of covered that with, you know, also Jupiter. So it would be Thor's day, or, you know, Zeus in Greek. And then Friday, and there's different ways. Freya, Freg, Frigg, Frigga. Like, there's a lot of different translations here. Obviously, that would be Venus, and that would be Odin's wife, right? So, and then Saturn, yeah. Which is, Saturn got kind of changed because it was Saturn and like a satyr, and it's a little, Kronos, and because he swallowed all his children, it's a little too dark for them, and it ended up being more derived from Sabbath, the Sabbath day, but because no one wants to see somebody, a satyr, eating humans, right? So they kind of changed it over time, a little bit more palatable. But, yeah, so it's really cool because you use these words every day, and people don't really know where they come from or what their meanings are. So it's really cool how we still use these names. And they're all the way back from when? So, yeah. So I'm on a Tuesday. So do you know what day you were born, Rack?
Yeah, same as Deb. Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Okay. And Hatter, what about you?
Friday.
So what is it, Frey? Child is loving and giving. That's Deb's little rhyme nursery thing here. That's what you got. So you're loving and giving.
That's Thursday.
It turns out that the poem I wrote, you gave me a gold for. It was called "While the Hills Are Ablaze with the Moon's Yellow Haze," and this song is in the author's notes.
Oh my gosh! Don't play it. But you can read your poem if you want. And Hatter and Rack, if you have anything slightly remotely on topic, please tell me or drop a poem. I've done all the ones that are in my topic list. I'm going to delete my topic list. And you guys can do right. You can just go right on the board.
Let me get out of it first. Okay.
So don't try to look for my topic list. Just drop it on the board. And... I mean, Deb, you're more than welcome to read that. I mean, I know I already read it, but, right? It's on top if you talked about it. That's my cute little niece. She's so cute. She's like my little mini-me. That's probably why Deb thought it was me. Okay, Deb, you have the floor.
Oh, okay, Yeah. All right. This is called "While the Hills Are Ablaze with the Moon's Yellow Haze." And here we go. Outside the parlor windowsill, cypress dot the top of the hill, and all the tree leaves are green. But the red roses color the scene. Giant clouds float into the sky, shifting for every staring eye, tinted by the sun's lemonade glow that lights the wildflower meadow. Inside the window pane's glass, green eyes spy the bonny lass, standing by the front picture window in a tie-dye dress and a big pink bow. Curls dangle from her ponytail as she reads the morning mail. She sports her little beaded bracelet and necklace with an onyx baguette. Her breakfast fills up her tummy. Pancakes and eggs are yummy. Now she skips by flowering, buried to the tree swing in the valley to read. Blooming jasmine perfumes the air, blowing the branches in her and her hair. Afternoon flies buried in the storybook, sunsets over the edges of the brook. Without lunch, her stomach growls. Running home, she spots two owls. After dinner, they sit on the front deck. From the treetops, woodpeckers peck. All while the hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze, climbing to dangle on the ebony sky, circled in tin stars that glitter up high. And a poem.
I love it. I did give you the gold. And so I lied to you, Hatter. One person got it before you, and that was Deb for Lee. So I'm sorry, Deb. One person did get it before you, but really, honestly, most people don't. I love this. So my mom used to take my niece to, and she actually used to take me too, and my brother, but thank goodness my mother did not have access to internet or a camera when I was young.
Oh, no.
Because her poor grandchildren, she just loves. So my love of picture taking is definitely from my birth mother. She really, I think a lot of my creativity, it's kind of funny too, because I didn't really grow up with her a lot. I wasn't really with her a lot, and I actually didn't even live with her till I was about 7, I think. And I was raised mostly till then by my godmother. And then they had a split custody kind of thing from then on. And even then, I did not have a lot of time with my birth mother. And it's kind of funny because she's the creative one. My godmother, the one who raised me, she's very mathematical, precise, very, this is the box, here we are, this is what it is, perfect spelling. she can do any math problem. It's amazing. You give her any math problem, she'll figure it out. I don't know how she does it. She's brilliant. But she has a very, you know, if I hang something up, she's bringing over the leveler. You know, she's very precise. And my birth mother, the entire opposite of that, she was like, color on the walls. Her phone book was literally a bunch of numbers in pen on the wall next to her wall phone. She's very, very creative. She likes to paint, to draw. She likes to write. She likes to take photos, and so my photo taking is definitely influenced by her love of photo taking. As much as I love her photos, I am glad that I was not subject to being the participant in those photos growing up, because my poor nephews and nieces she always the camera, and they're gonna have a lot of good memories. But she used to take us to the nursing home and would have us sing. So she took my brother and I when we were young to the nursing home, and we would sing to the people at the nursing home. And she used to do that all the time. And she did that with my nieces. And that's the picture there that you see. And I just love this poem. Obviously, I loved it. I gave it a gold. I thought it was so tender and lovingly done, and I love the twist in words. I love the effort that you put into it. It was so beautiful to me to have it, and it really, really made me smile. I definitely hold it dear. And I do apologize. Hatter, you weren't the first one. Sorry. Debbie, yeah. Rock, what do you think about the poem? I love this one.
I think, you know, considering what she was writing to, she did an amazing job. You know, I could see a lot of the parallels that she's talking about, and the little nods to your name. It's beautiful. I thought you were raised by tree nymphs.
No, just two. Just my mom. Just my two moms. Oh, by tree nymphs. I thought you said by three nymphs. A tree nymph, yeah, maybe. My mom, my birth mother, she loves mushrooms. You see all my mushroom photos? It's because we go on battles. We go on picture battles. That's what we call them. She goes, you want to go picture hunting today with me? And I say, okay. And then we go out together because no one else wants to go with us, because, like, who wants to go in the forest and sit there and, like, and go very slowly through the forest and try to hunt for pictures? And we always try to beat one up each other. So she'll get a really nice picture of a mushroom, and she'll be like, well, I can't take a picture of that now because you found it first. And she'll try to find a bigger mushroom or try to find a bee. She's really good at bees. I'm a little afraid of bees. I'm really afraid of bees. So she always gets a really good bee shot, and I'm always envious. But you know what? Chipmunks love me. I don't know what it is about chipmunks, but I always get great shots of chipmunks. They don't go away, and I get great shots, so I'm always getting chipmunk shots, and she gets so mad, so she'll try to get little bugs and stuff that I won't go near, and we just try to always one-up each other. It's just a fun thing that we do. Hatter, what do you think about the poem? Hatter?
Unmuted.
Oh, unmuted. Yeah, Debbie always does good describing, you know, views, what she's seeing or what she imagines, what she sees. She's gotten really good with the colors. I try to put colors in my lights. I find it hard. Unless it's black.
Yeah. And gray.
I've got a picture I got to share with you guys.
Okay. You dropped two poems. Which ones do you want to read, Hatter?
I
honestly don't know if we will be able to. The first one?
The first one I put, that's got the like knights, armor and that kind of stuff. But then I remembered I did one of the planets. So the second one.
Oh, good. Okay. So I'm going to bookmark both. So I will read both. But I honestly, we're talking so much, and we only have 15 minutes left, and I don't think we're going to have enough time. But I am going to bookmark both, so I definitely will read it. I'm definitely going to read it later. And what's the picture? Did you put it up? Thank you, Deb, so much. Deb, I appreciate you calling in and writing and sharing those pieces. And didn't you say you were going to share a picture, Hatter?
Yeah, I'm looking for it right now. Just take me a minute. It's when you talk about taking pictures of mushrooms.
Huh. Oh yeah, I absolutely love. I don't know what it is. It's all nature. But I just she just really loves mushrooms.
They take.
All right.
Pictures.
While you're looking for the picture,
okay.
Because I'm going to. I know it's 15 minutes from now, but I'm going to talk about my closing out song so we don't get too off track, because you got to read your poem also, Hatter. So the closing song we're going to close with is a song, it's actually a cover, but the original song is about the extremes that exist within us, and it is The Counting Crows, Colorblind. Coffee black and egg white, our unwillingness to reveal them. Taffy stuck and tongue-tied, stutter shook and uptight, the defenseness we put up to keep people from seeing our true natures. I am covered in skin, no one gets to come in, and the terrifying bliss that we let our defenses down to someone that we love. Pull me out from inside, I'm ready. Colorblind is a state in which we no longer judge our inner feelings. And this was information provided by Song Facts, and then of course the original work was by Counting Crows, and our cover is by a YouTuber, and I have to refresh my page because I do, and I'm going to tell you what that is in one moment. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know why, but I have to refresh. But I do love the Counting Crows version. I don't want you to think I don't love it. It's one of my favorite songs. I really love it. I have a lot of favorite songs, so you'll hear me say that a lot. But I also like going on YouTube, and I don't know why, but I just love seeing different covers and seeing different artists and, you know, kind of getting a feel of what they can do. I think it's pretty cool. And... S is taking a long time to get to. Okay, here we go, Sky. it is, still don't have it. All right, well, I'll get back to you on that. It's Natalie something. Oh, here we go, Natalie Walker. She's a YouTuber. Okay, so that's our closing song. Hatter, are you ready to read now?
Not quite. I know I'm close. Darn it. I might have to give it up.
Do you want to read your poem and then we'll comment and then you can still look for the picture after reading your poem?
Okay.
Or you want me to read your poem? Is that what you're about to ask?
Okay, no, I'll get out of this. I'll get out of this. it was a good idea. It's a funny, sort of a funny picture.
All right.
It's buried. Okay. Get back over there. Okay. Rolling stones and asteroids. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Got
it? Yep.
Okay, it goes like this. Rolling stones and asteroids and shooting of the stars. riding rings around Saturn and crashing into Mars. Mercury watched as Venus fell and Pluto began to stray. Uranus said he would never tell as Neptune swam away. Jupiter kept his eyes aground looking for a moon. The sun is trying to illuminate the corner of the room. Done is time, I'm not alone. The end is close at hand. Gratefully, I leave this world in search of the promised land.
This is cool. When you did this, let's see. I liked, first of all, how you brought me all the planets. I love the background, the aesthetics of it, and your poem, Rolling Stones at Asteroids. I think that's really clever. I think that's really, really clever. And the shooting of the stars. I think if I was, like, kind of like flipping through pages and looking, sometimes they have that on the main page, just like the first few lines of the poem, I think I would definitely click. And it's very lyrical. It's almost like you could actually even make it into a song if you really wanted to, because this especially the first section, it just reminds me of a refrain, you know, rolling stones and asteroids, the shooting of the stars, riding rings around Saturn and crashing into Mars. I don't know why, but I really hear this being sung. Really well done. I like how you brought them in.
That was the hook line. I mean, that's
the
first line is what I thought of, and then it's all built around it.
Well, it's very catchy, so I can see why that would be the hook line in it. If you were to be sung, yeah, I think that would be the hook line, too. I also liked the funny cleverness of it, of course, when you get down to done is time, I'm not alone in the end, and the close at hand, gratefully I leave this world and start to a promised land. So when you're thinking about journeying, I think when you look out into the vast unknown and you think about death and you say, I don't know where I'm going, or when you think about how big the universe is and how spacious it is, I like how you take that turn and you kind of relate that to moving on from this world. So you're taking space and the idea of death, and you're kind of saying you're using those as interchangeable metaphor, and I like that you have done that. I thought that was really clever. Really well done. Thank you, Hatter. And Brack?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, Hatter. The play on the title and the idea of shooting stars calls the attention to the added dimension of the fact that you're talking about song titles as well as, you know, rock stars and things like that, and bringing that into the planets and things. It's clever, really clever.
Yeah, thank you. You know what you were saying, Sky? Too, the universe is so big. We only know physics and science in this atmosphere. Under this pressure, and it's not going to be matched anywhere else in the universe. So the physics of things can be changed. I think it's sort of a conceited thought to think it's all the way we have it here in this atmosphere. Because
yeah,
out there, it is not.
You know, I love how we're so intense on figuring out space, but what I want to know why is we've only searched 5% of the underneath the water.
The ocean.
You know, like, come on now. I love space and I love it, but, you know, we could have aliens dwelling. You ever seen the movie The Abyss?
At the time, we don't know about. Well, at the time, you had Carl Sagan and NASA and all the astronauts still living, and that was very romantic. What did the ocean have? Jacques Cousteau. That was it.
Well, I still think it needs a little bit more credit. As you could probably tell from all my down the tube, you know, lamentations of water creatures, you probably may know by this point that I do have an affinity for the ocean, but I just think it's amazing how on our own planet, we have less discovered on our own planet than we do out there, and I just think it's out there in space, and I just think it's incredibly unbalanced, and they need to figure out the pressure.
Can you what's heading towards California? we have this massive blob, 5,000 estimated 5,000 miles wide. And it's that sawgrass seaweed, smells like rotten eggs, and it's coming ashore in train cars. I mean, they said
drones.
It's just starting. It won't peak until July, so the West Coast is just going to be one stinky mess all summer.
Oh, my gosh. I have to say, there's a lot of things that New Hampshire, you know, and New England, there's, like, snowstorms and ice storms, and there's a lot of dark winters and cold days, but I don't think I would live anywhere else, honestly. I maybe move to Vermont. That's probably as far as I would go, because when I think about all the natural disasters, I think we get away from a lot of them here.
Well, I think people get comfortable with tornadoes, earthquakes.
Yeah, I know. There's that too, but in defense, I don't have any tornadoes. I don't have earthquakes. Where I live, I'm not like hit with tsunamis or whatever you've got going on over there with the stuff.
You just have exploding hot water heaters.
Yes, we just have frozen pipes and frozen pipes and no electricity because of winter. Ever. Just all winter, no electricity. But it's fine.
You can imagine why cabin fever was common.
Most of us New Englanders are smart enough to have generators. So, I mean, if you live in New England and you don't have a generator, you're doing something wrong. All right, guys. I am having a lot of fun, but I do have to close it out pretty soon. So I do want to say my thank yous. I want to thank Rackentor for being here the whole show. I appreciate you. I want to thank Stephen for calling in the beginning and bringing me a poem about Neptune and wonderful conversation, and thank you for that. I want to thank Hatter and Deb for calling in and for sharing, conversation and poetry and laughs. We went into a lot of different directions today, and that's wonderful because the whole point of it is going down a tube. So we just, you start from one place and you get to another, and that's how it is.
I learned something.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
I thought I was a Wednesday child. But I looked it up. I'm a Friday child.
Yeah. So you're Odin's wife today. Frigga.
Yeah.
So look that up. One thing that I do, I just love to learn. Yeah, I love to learn. When people say something I don't know, I will say, I'm not really afraid to say, what does that mean? Teach me about that. And I tend to place myself around people that can teach me stuff because I always do like to learn, and so if someone brings something up, I'm like, I'm gonna look that up now because I'm curious about that, and I love language, and it's really cool to see where it comes from. So I'm glad you learned something, and maybe one day we'll hit on the months. Where the days of the month came from, because that's something too that we won't go into today. But maybe we'll do that next time. So thank you guys. I'm going to press play to my song, and thank you guys so much again.
Bye, guys.
Bye.